Redline.
Welcome to Radio VR and its weekend program Redline with me, Julia Lubova.
And Sergei Strokin.
Ukraine, nothing to celebrate. The 23rd anniversary of Ukraine's independence, marked this Sunday, comes as the most tragic national day for a war-ravaged country in the heart of Europe. Celebrations and military parade in Kiev are overshadowed by the Ukrainian army bloody campaign in the eastern regions amid failed diplomatic efforts to reach a much-awaited ceasefire. Ferguson riots testing Obama's guts. Violent protests that broke out in reaction to the police shooting of a black teenager, Michael Brown, in the town of Ferguson has turned America's heartland into a battlefield. Ferguson riots can become a critical test for the first African-American president, who was initially seen as personally committed to working on racial inequalities. And also Julian Assange, will he escape from a London trap? WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who became world-famous after unveiling of hundreds of thousands of U.S. secret documents, has surprised the world one more time. Without citing a reason, Assange pledged to leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he has been hiding for 2 years to avoid extradition to Sweden on rape allegations. So let us come to our first section beyond the headlines to address the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, which this week has seen deadliest clashes in months and claimed tens of lives of innocent civilians. Donetsk and Lugansk regions, left with no food, water and basic necessities, were dramatically sliding into humanitarian catastrophe. The bitter irony is that this was the week when Ukraine was marking 23rd anniversary of its independence and President Poroshenko has seen no reason to cancel celebrations and military parade in the cities of Kiev and Odessa.
Well, Julia, that was another very bad week, a very bad week in many ways. We've seen ongoing bloodshed and endless killings in Ukraine. We've seen crippled efforts of international diplomacy, and we've seen also a lot of drum beaters on the part of the Ukrainian patriots, and also we've seen that the humanitarian convoy, which was sent from Russia, got stuck at the border. I'm not speaking about the reasons who was dragging feet, actually. I'm not pointing fingers at one of the parties, but the reality is such that those people who got trapped, hold in Lugansk and Donetsk, actually, they're deprived of the right just to get the access to their basic necessities. So all in all, that really seems that Ukraine still remains one of the major crises and challenges to international community. But probably you'll say that this sounds irrelevant, but I am optimist. I'm optimist because also this week we've seen that despite major differences on how the conflict should be resolved, we've seen that Russia needs resolution, Ukraine needs resolution, European Union needs resolution, and we've seen start of that negotiating process, which would be followed by Poroshenko-Putin meeting, which is slated for the next week in Minsk. So it means that sooner or later we'll see the solution.
Absolutely. Well, loads of questions to be asked of our guests. And of course, let's welcome Thomas Heine, who's a prominent author and observer of Copenhagen's Politiken Daily. Thank you very much for joining us in our studio.
Thank you.
We've seen some diplomatic efforts being made this week, of course, some meetings between foreign ministers of Russia, Ukraine and Germany, and of course, German chancellors traveling to Kiev this weekend. And so do you think a diplomatic solution is on the table for this crisis?
I don't think it'll be a very rapid diplomatic solution, but it's definitely positive that people are talking now. And I think that the summit in Minsk next week is a very important development.
How likely do you think Putin and Poroshenko to meet at this summit and to talk about this crisis? And how likely are they to actually come find some kind of a solution that would suit both sides?
I would suppose that they will be meeting, hopefully shaking hands, coming up with a solution, saying that the war in Ukraine will be finished next week. That's very unlikely.
What do you think is the actual likely outcome of their meeting?
Probably, hopefully, a lowering of tensions, a start of a dialogue. I mean, diminishing the risk of what I think everybody in Europe is fearing, which is a direct confrontation between Russia and Ukraine.
Thomas, still recently we have seen major differences between Russia and European Union on the ways how to resolve the Ukrainian crisis. Well, if we put differences aside, what can be, let us just presume, you see, what can be a sort of a platform for compromise? What are the key points on which we can agree with the Europeans, with Russians?
I think the Europeans are quite adamant that the Donbass region is an integral part of Ukraine and that Russia should stop its military help to the insurgents.
But Russia denies that, that there's any. But anyway, but this is European interpretation, yeah?
It is.
Yeah. So go ahead, please.
At the same time, I think Europe is very much hoping for the government in Kiev to show restraint and to make sure that innocent lives are not spilt in Luhansk and Donetsk. And also having Poroshenko giving guarantees that the rights of the Russian-speaking population in Ukraine will be upheld.
Red Line.
All right, well, let's bring in Alexei Abatov, head of the Center of International Security at the Institute of World Economy and International Relations. Mr. Abatov, thank you very much for joining us. We're just discussing potential for a diplomatic solution to the crisis in Ukraine, of course, with all the efforts being made, with all the meetings we've seen between foreign ministers and so on this week. But of course, Angela Merkel is traveling to Kiev this weekend. What do you think is the reason for this meeting in Kiev, and what likely outcomes can it bring?
Well, I think the European Union leaders will try to impress on President Poroshenko that it would be wise to agree to a ceasefire, because continuing military operations apparently will not bring victory to Ukrainian army, but rather multiply destruction, fatalities, outflow of refugees.
Mr. Abatov, let me ask you about the question of the future solution, if we speak about all-embracing, long-standing solution. Okay, if we say, let us keep fingers crossed, we reach the ceasefire, what comes next? What can be a compromise on the issue of the future political structure of Ukraine?
Well, political structure of Ukraine is a domestic problem for Ukrainian government, parliament, local governments. But certainly the present arrangement should be changed, in particular decentralization, to give the rights to the provinces to elect their legislative and executive authorities. That's a very democratic procedure. Any reason why that should not be done? Much greater financial, social autonomy, particularly with respect to taxations. This is also quite a democratic thing, all the more so that the two presently tumultuous areas are depressed areas. Even from that point of view, it would be economically more attractive to the government to take off its shoulders some of the burden of economy, taxes, social security, and delegate it to those regions. To recognize the right of those regions to maintain their traditional ties with Russia, economic, humanitarian, the right to speak Russian language, which should be recognized as an equal state language at the local level whenever the local governments and population would like to have it as a second language. Actually, it doesn't necessarily relate only to Russian language. Ukraine is a multinational country, and in some other areas there are other ethnic groups who would also like to have their languages be given equal status with Ukrainian at the local level, so to say. That is the second, so to say, the second profile of agreement. And on a macro scale, of course, the West, European Union, United States, Russia, and Ukrainian government have to find some agreement on the future of Ukraine as a state. Neutral military status, so that Ukraine doesn't become a member of NATO. Guarantees of security, withdrawal of Russian troops from the border areas, maybe some additional arrangements in addition to what we have to ensure that there are no troop concentrations there, provide for transparency, inspections, so that Ukraine can implement reforms and eventually integrate with European Union whenever this time comes, maybe in the long run. But at the same time, retain its close economic ties in energy sector and high technology with Russia, which is in Russian interest and in Ukrainian interest.
Red Line.
Well, let's now talk to Dr. Hubertus Hoffmann, who's the founder and the president of World Security Network Foundation. Dr. Hoffmann, thank you very much for joining us. Well, we just heard a set of conditions from our previous guest and, of course, from Ukraine and from Russia. Angela Merkel is traveling to Kiev this weekend. From Germany, what kind of hopes are pinned on this meeting, and why is she traveling to Kiev? What is on the agenda for this meeting, and how likely do you think any kind of solution from this meeting?
It's more symbolic. meeting to show solidarity from the German people to the Ukrainians. And as you are aware, Germany tries to reach a consensus between Ukraine and Russia. And it's time to end the conflict now in the interest, I would say, of the Ukrainian people, but as well of the Russian people. As you have seen with the shooting down of the civilian airliner, which has crossed the red line, it's time basically to withdraw as well Mr. Gherkin, Colonel Gherkin, and other reserve officers from Russia, back home to Russia. I think that these involvements have to end and a consensus can be reached. The consensus could look like the guest has told before. We need a protection of the Russian identity. We have good experience with this all over Europe. Look at South Tyrolia in the north, in the Alps of Italy. It has a German majority, German cultural majority, Austrian majority of 60% German speaking, and it's part of Italy. And it had been reached in 72, the South Tyrolean court guaranteeing the rights of the German majority there. So this is the best practice we should take for the eastern part of Ukraine as well. And we have many areas in Slovenia, in the north of Germany, where we have two different languages. The street signs are in two languages and so on. So I think we just should copy the best practice to appreciate cultural diversity. But this has to be in one package. For Russia, I think it has had been a kind of miscalculation as well. I don't understand what Russia wants, actually. I fully understand it wants to protect the Russian identity. I 100% agree with this. But if you can do it with weapons, I doubt. I think that Ukraine and Russia are like sisters and brothers. And it has reached as well this tragic, like a war between brothers and sisters. And that must end as well. And the people involved are strange kind of soldiers, killers of some thousand. And that gets out of control as well. I think it's time to reset the button for peace and an agreement. And as you have seen, it had cost Russia more than 200 billions in loss of currency valuations of stocks, and it has problems. So I think we have to end this conflict now. It's the right time, and it must come an initiative from Russia, and Mrs. Merkel could help to convince the Ukrainians as well to agree.
Dr. Hoffman, just thank you for that very emotional comment, thought-provoking comment. But just to wrap it up, the talk of the week was also upcoming meeting between Presidents Putin and Poroshenko. What are the hopes coming from Europe and from Germany? You were speaking about mediating the role of Germany. So what is expected then?
It's in line. I just heard on German television live the foreign minister of Ukraine. He had been, as you know, ambassador to Berlin, and it was in German. And he said we have a plan which is supported by the government of Ukraine and by the EU and by the US, and it integrates autonomy for the East. So now it's time for the Russian side, for the Russian president, to come up with a full plan. And it has to be on the identity. The Russians must basically not agree to this plan, but must come with a detailed plan what to do. And I think we are not so far away if the Russian side as well proposes a more detailed plan. And I think a consensus can be reached.
Thank you very much to our guest, Dr. Hoffman, the founder and president of World Security Network Foundation, and Alexey Abatov, head of the Center of International Security at the Institute of World Economy and International Relations. And also thank you to our guest in our studio, Thomas Heine, observer at the Politiken Daily and a prominent author. Thank you very much. And still to come on our program, Ferguson riots testing Obama's guts, violent protests that broke out in reaction to the police shooting of a black teenager, Michael Brown, in the town of Ferguson has turned America's heartland into a battlefield. Ferguson riots can become a critical test for the first African-American president, who was initially seen as personally committed to working on racial inequalities. And also Julian Assange, will he escape from a London trap? WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who became world famous after unveiling of hundreds of thousands of US secret documents, has surprised the world one more time. Without citing a reason, Assange pledged to leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Stay with us.